practical level, it's probably not as significant, at least economically, as some folks have thought.
Alaskans reflect on a new political era. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 19th of November. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Congressman Don Young speaks out about his victory for the first time.
It was somewhat of a surprise to the pollsters. It was not a surprise to myself nor my wife.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alaska Conservation Solutions, providing ways to measure your carbon footprint and reduce your energy consumption at AlaskaConservationSolutions.com. And by Tell Alaska, encouraging listeners to tune to AK every weekend. Check your local public radio station for airtimes. Tell Alaska on the web at TellAlaska.com.
Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich spent his first day as senator-elect today. After a tough election battle, he won Ted Stevens' long-held U.S. Senate seat yesterday. Begich acknowledged Stevens' years of service to the state, saying he respected that work. But he says he thinks Alaska is shifting, much as Anchorage did when he was elected mayor and beat a Republican incumbent for the first time in the city's history.
People are staying here longer. They're retiring here. They're building their homes and raising their families. My son's a third generation. I mean, it's a different kind of attitude. Because of that, I think in a lot of ways, Alaskans are looking at the people who will represent them on the long term. And I think in my case, that's what I've always talked about. So I've seen a Democrat in action. And I wouldn't consider the state always a solid red. I think what you have here is a state in transformation.
Begich's win brings congressional Democrats one seat closer to a filibuster-proof Senate. Two other races are still counting votes, but he says the bottom line for him is Alaskans' interests will be at the forefront.
And if there is a vote that requires a busting of a filibuster that's anti-Alaska, absolutely I'm not interested. I don't care what the party asks me for. I don't care what the leadership asks me for. Alaska's priorities are going to be the first, and always the first.
He says he will focus on the economic crisis, skyrocketing energy costs, health care, and education. Begich says he is happy that Congress is concentrating on long-term stimulus ideas such as rebuilding sewer, water, and other infrastructures nationally rather than focusing on short-term fixes.
Because we have a lot of infrastructure needs in our state and we'll continue to have that. And the United States Senate, Congress will play a role in that. So I feel very confident. The goal will be to ensure sustainability. Earmarks are one-time opportunities. What we need to do is look at where we're going to impact and make sure that the investment into our infrastructure is a long-term and sustainable, not just for the moment.
Begich says appropriations, finance, veterans, commerce, and energy are all committees he's interested in, but he'll work with Senator Lisa Murkowski to figure out what's best.
Talk about what committee she may be on, and I am seeking so we don't overlap, that we actually spread our resources around properly. So that will be one of the conversations I have with her to see where she wants to be placed and what she's going to be doing, so we make sure we don't have two on the same committee where we could spread our resources around.
Begich says he anticipates earmarks will take on a more holistic approach with money for longer-term infrastructure. He says he will argue that Alaska's marine highway system be included in the upcoming transportation bill. The news that the Senate's longest-serving Republican will not be returning to office next year sunk in today in Washington. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Senator Ted Stevens' office in the Senate's Hart Building brims with 40 years of Alaskan and congressional history and usually buzzes with activity. In pictures lining the walls, Stevens is shown with his arm around constituents and fishing with family. Awards hang next to Alaskan art, like a willow root basket given to him in appreciation from a regional native corporation. All of that will soon be packed away into boxes. On Tuesday morning, the office had an air of sadness. Senator Stevens spent most of the day there, periodically accepting visits from friends and colleagues. He didn't talk to reporters and breezed past TV crews waiting outside or avoided them using a secondary exit. The last few weeks have been a roller coaster of highs and lows for Stevens' loyal staff. The stress of watching the campaign season tick away as Stevens sat in Washington on trial, the low of his felony conviction, and then the high of his hero's welcome back in Alaska. The thrill of election night when the votes were in his favor melted away into the edge of the seat weight of the last few days as ballots were counted. And now, finally, this fight is over. The office of Senator Lisa Murkowski was also subdued Tuesday as the loss of her colleague sunk in.
Well, I don't think we can start the conversation without acknowledging and recognizing the contribution of Ted Stevens for the past four decades in the United States Senate. He leaves an incredible footprint. He has done an incredible job for the state of Alaska. And as we move forward, it will be different.
Murkowski says Stevens' seniority and ability were able to drive much of Alaska's agenda. Now, after just 6 years in office, she will be Alaska's senior senator.
My partner for all these years is no longer going to be here in the Senate. That certainly puts a different cast on what we're doing. I think the expectation is our workload is going to increase, and happy to take that on. But it is going to be a change for us, so we're getting geared up.
The third leg of Alaska's delegation, Congressman Don Young, says Stevens' legacy is spread all over the state in aviation, telemedicine, the Denali Commission, fishing policy, and the strength of military bases.
I'm going to miss the senator. He'll be around, and I talked to him, and he says he has no rearview mirrors. He's going to go ahead, and I'm very proud of it.
Young says regardless of how the last few months have gone, Alaskans will remember Stevens' 40 years of service.
I think it's a sad day when in fact, he was indicted and convicted on issues that I don't think are relative to the job he's done. And he, very frankly, will probably win the appeal. But in the meantime, he's lost the job as being the senator for all of Alaska.
Now comes the challenge of welcoming a brand new senator, and a Democrat, no less, the first to represent Alaska in nearly 30 years. Congressman Young says Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich has big shoes to fill.
We look forward to working with the new senator. Mark is going to try to do the job that the senator's done. He's going to have a difficult time. But, you know, in time, he'll probably, you know, get to the point where he can do the same thing.
Young seems willing to put aside party differences to an extent.
We'll be able to work together. I'm confident of that. And if he continues to do it and is not led astray by the liberal element of the Senate, he'll do good.
Senator Murkowski says it will be different not having the Republican team that's been in place for decades, but she's looking at the benefits of working across party lines.
We may be able to, I'm hopeful that we will be able to complement on those issues that are Alaskan priorities. Me working it on my side of the aisle, Mark working it on his side of the aisle, and see accomplishments for Alaska.
Murkowski says she and Begich won't agree on all the issues, but she's confident they can work together. She called the senator-elect this morning to congratulate him.
I have had the opportunity to work with Mark for years now as he has been serving as the mayor of our largest city in the state. And from a legislative perspective, in terms of initiatives that we have been working on, Mark and I have a very good relationship.
Murkowski and Begich started talking on Tuesday about what committees Begich will shoot to get on. Both agreed they'll try to complement each other's committee assignments, an early sign of working together. As Begich's star rises, Capitol Hill will start saying goodbye to Senator Stevens. He attended a reception for retiring senators Tuesday night with his wife. On his way in, he wouldn't stop to talk about his lost election race. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
2 weeks after Election Day, Don Young is reflecting on his victory. He was staying mum on the election results until he heard from Democratic challenger Ethan Berkowitz. Berkowitz called Young yesterday to concede after the Division of Elections counted the latest batch of ballots. The two fought a tough battle for an election bid that pollsters had predicted Berkowitz would win. Young says he's thrilled with the results, but by no means shocked.
I'm very excited about the election. I'm very pleased that Alaskans have chosen myself and my wife for another 2 years, and we look forward to being very productive for Alaskans and continuing what we've been doing for the last 35 years. It was somewhat of a surprise to the pollsters. It was not a surprise to myself nor my wife.
Young says Berkowitz ran a good race, and they were able to debate the issues. This will be Young's 19th term representing Alaska in Congress. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, reaching out to young homeless people in Fairbanks.
Back when I was really young, you know, we had to, like, steal to eat and live.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans. Support for APRN coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from Penn Air, offering scheduled charter services throughout Alaska and the United States.
Alaskans are reflecting on what life will be like without Uncle Ted in the Senate. APRN's Annie Feit talked with residents in Anchorage. Many are mourning the way his career ended, but also say they're ready for change.
At the busy Fred Meyer in Midtown Anchorage, shoppers stopped in the chilly entryway to reflect on the end of an era in Alaska politics. Brock Allen expressed the views of many.
Fantastic. They start doing shady deals and start not looking out for our interests, we need to get him out. So I'm real happy about it.
But the 85-year-old Stevens still won plenty of votes. Over the years, he has steered billions of dollars in federal funding to Alaska, and he helped usher the territory into statehood. That counted for a lot with Alaskans like Phil Walczak. He says he can't accept Stevens' felony conviction by a jury thousands of miles away.
And I voted for him for the things he did in the past. And maybe as a way of saying that people in Washington shouldn't be making decisions for us on what's right and wrong.
Ruth Dean says she was embarrassed so many Alaskans voted for Stevens, even after he was convicted. But she says it's hard to see the way his long career came to an end.
I think it's sad that such a man who I admired over the years let his judgment falter. And I'm sad for him because he has been a great man and he has done wonders for Alaska. But his judgment, that doesn't excuse his judgment in the later years.
KAKM public television host Michael Carey says Alaska is ready for change, but he agrees it's a sad day and acknowledges that might be difficult for people outside to understand.
It's sadder than I think people around the world can ever imagine. He participated in all the great events of the last 50 years. He changed Alaska and left his footprint everywhere.
Stephen Haycox is a professor at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. He says throughout his long Senate career, Stevens has concentrated on educating the rest of the country on Alaska issues and developing the state's narrow economy.
He's been focused on that throughout his whole career. I don't think any Alaska politician has any choice but to be focused on that agenda because of the narrowness of Alaska's economy. And he has certainly done that extremely well.
But he says he doesn't think Stevens' exit from Congress represents the economic tragedy for the state that some have predicted.
The federal government has supported Alaska economic development and non-native settlement since the beginning of Alaska's possession by the United States, and it will continue to do so. So on a practical level, it's probably not as significant, at least economically, as some folks have thought.
And Haycox says, like the rest of the nation, Alaska seems to be moving toward more democratic politics.
Senator Stevens' loss may be part of a general shift in Alaska politics back toward the democratic liberal wing of American politics, where Alaska was from statehood until big oil.
Haycox was especially surprised Begich won all across rural Alaska, which has traditionally been a huge base of support for Stevens. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
With Begich headed to Washington in January, Anchorage will need a new mayor. Matt Klayman is currently assembly chair and will be interim mayor. He hasn't decided yet if he'll run for the job himself. He says his first commitment is to do what's best for the city.
And in doing that, I think my first goal will be to work with the Begich administration to work through a transition, basically work to transition into that role. So it's not a situation when Mark Begich steps down on Monday night and on Tuesday morning I step in and I don't know anything about what's going on the 8th floor of City Hall. And so I think the priority for me is going to be to work with his administration so that when he does resign, I've been spending more time in City Hall and working with the people that is acting mayor I would need to work with to keep the city moving ahead.
Today, Mayor Begich said that when he became mayor in 2003, he inherited a mess, that the city was in a deficit and people had to be let go. And he said that now the city's in good shape and it should be relatively smooth for an incoming mayor. Do you agree with that assessment, or where do you think Anchorage is right now?
I think Anchorage is in very good shape. I think that's reflected. There's a national magazine, and I apologize for not remembering the name of it, but it was a national magazine that found that Anchorage was one of the best cities, was one of the strongest cities with the current difficult economic times ahead. And I think that's in large part a reflection on the very positive things that our city has done as a government in the last 6 years. And I think the challenge for both an acting mayor and the next mayor is to continue that strong record of success.
What happens moving forward now? You'll take over as interim mayor, and then what's the process going forward to electing the next mayor?
The charter provides that there would be a special election at least 90 days after the chair becomes the acting mayor. If you figure that that change will take place about January 1st, 90 days from January 1st is April 1st, and we already have a regular municipal election on the first Tuesday in April. So my expectation, although that's ultimately a decision for the municipal clerk, my general sense is that there will not be a special election, that the next election will be the first Tuesday in April.
Matt Clayman is chair of the Anchorage Assembly and will be acting mayor. The Denali Commission is tightening up its guidelines for the projects it funds in rural Alaska. High fuel prices are prompting an out-migration from the bush, and yesterday the commission passed a new sustainability policy to avoid investing in oversized facilities for communities that might shrink so much that they couldn't afford to keep them going. The commission's advisory committee is trying to get a better handle on the specifics of the out-migration that everyone now knows is happening. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Government planners rarely get much attention. In fact, policymakers frequently ignore them. But not this time. Meetings of the Denali Commission's planning workgroup that used to draw six or seven people are now overstuffing the meeting room with a dozen or more participating by teleconference. Bernie Richert of the U.S. Commerce Department's Economic Development Administration is the panel's federal co-chair.
The planning workgroup of the Denali Commission is basically a forum for people to come together and discuss issues we feel are of common and urgent interest. And at the moment, obviously, things like energy, out-migration from the villages, some of these things are at the top of the heap.
Politically endangered with the demise of its godfather, Senator Ted Stevens, the commission gives out better than $100 million a year to build up infrastructure and create jobs in rural Alaska. Its funding is safe for a while as Congress keeps the government going with yet another continuing resolution instead of passing appropriations bills. And Senator-elect Mark Begich says he'll try to keep the commission alive by broadening its mission to include rural development in other states. But meanwhile, the economics of rural Alaska have been going through some lurches that everybody's trying to figure out. School enrollment figures show a five-year downward trend, but the Matanuska, Susitna Valley, and Anchorage districts are growing, and boarding school enrollment has risen 24% in that time. State demographer Greg Williams says all of Southeast but Juneau is losing population, and young adults and children particularly are moving from villages all across the state to the urban centers. These are trends that have been going on for a while. His most recent data is from the permanent fund applications last spring before oil prices hit their big peak last summer. The school enrollment numbers are fresher, though the working group did not get a report yet on what communities had to shut down schools because their enrollment fell below the minimum for state funding. Richert says much more information is being developed by federal and state agencies, by the University of Alaska Institute for Social and Economic Research, the First Alaskans Foundation, and others. A lot of it should be ready for the planning group's next meeting in January.
At the moment, I believe what the group is trying to do, the planning work group, is really to pull together as much data as possible and then try to figure out what it really means.
Getting some sort of projection for where the outmigration is hitting hardest and to which communities people intend to return if fuel prices ease or schools open back up will be difficult to come up with, but very much needed as the Denali Commission seeks to apply its new sustainability guidelines that involve such things as putting more priority on projects that benefit multiple communities on a regional basis and not quite but almost redlining communities with populations below 100. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Providing statewide news coverage since 1978, we are the Alaska Public Radio Network, APRN, your source for Alaska's news. If heating your home costs more than you can manage and you have a low income, the state of Alaska has heating assistance programs that may help. The programs have expanded to include families with a higher household income. For information or an application form, call 1-800-470-3058 or visit heatinghelp.alaska.gov. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Bethel District Court Judge Dennis Cummings was in Anchorage Court earlier this week defending himself against a complaint of misconduct. The hearing is trying to decide whether or not Cummings acted inappropriately while presiding in the Western Alaska Hub community. Voters acted to retain Cummings in the general election despite a rare recommendation against it. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Angela Denning-Barnes reports.
The Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct charged Cummings in June with ethical violations, and they are the group hearing the trial. Marla Greenstein is the executive director.
The hearing is very much like a trial, so they took testimony and evidence. Each side had a lawyer that presented the case. There were many witnesses.
According to the written complaint, Cummings is charged with having contact with one side of a trial and not the other. He allegedly handed a note to an Alaska State Trooper who was a witness in the trial. When Cummings handed him the note, he said, quote, "This is in case you want to get together to go fishing sometime." But what the note had in it pertained to evidence in the case. Then Cummings allegedly passed a second note in the trial. This one was addressed to the trooper and an attorney in the trial. The Conduct Commission is made up of three judges, three attorneys, and three members of the public. They acted as the jury in the trial. Greenstein says they came up with a preliminary decision late Tuesday, but it won't be made public until one of the members writes up an opinion, which will probably happen by the end of the week. The least that could happen would be nothing if Cummings is found not guilty, and the most that could happen would be that he gets removed from the bench. In Alaska, no judge has ever been removed from the bench for an ethical violation. Alaska has held a public trial on a judge's behavior only 8 times before. Again, Marla Greenstein.
We only issue public charges against a judge once every two or three years, so it's unusual. And it's much more unusual for once we issue charges for it to get to the point of a full hearing.
In fact, Alaska has never done what the prosecutor was asking for in the trial, to suspend Cummings. That would take him away from the bench for a certain amount of time, and he could later be reinstated. However, Cummings' lawyer argued that if the court found the judge did do something wrong, he should be censured, which means the court would make an official statement of wrongdoing. If the Conduct Commission wants some sort of disciplinary action, the recommendation will go to the Alaska Supreme Court, which will have the final say on what happens to the judge.
The initial incident, as we understood it and investigated it, was a matter of concern to the council.
Larry Cohn, executive director of the Alaska Judicial Council, was in the courtroom on Monday. In the general election 2 weeks ago, they recommended that voters not retain Cummings. Cohn says their recommendation came from information about the complaint, but also from many other sources.
There were a number of concerns about Judge Cummings' judicial performance that were unrelated to this particular incident that all contributed to the council's recommendation.
Cummings started work in Bethel in 2001 in the district attorney's office and became Bethel's district court judge in January of 2006. He's lived in the state for about 40 years. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
This is National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week, and a candlelight vigil is being held tomorrow in Fairbanks for homeless youth. The annual Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Street Outreach Program event is staged to raise awareness of the community's population of young people struggling to scrape out a living. KYC's Dan Bross reports.
Being homeless is never anyone's first choice, but a variety of circumstances can lead to young people hitting the street. Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Street Outreach Coordinator Sarah Finnell says most homeless youth have experienced some form of abuse. She says they're usually out of school and often using drugs and getting into trouble. Finnell says there can be over 100 teens on any given day in the Fairbanks area who have either moved out or been kicked out of their homes.
I have a pretty strong network of teens that I'm in touch with. And there's about, I'd say somewhere around 60 of this particular group of teens who are all connected to each other in a variety of ways. They've either gone to school together, they've lived together, and they kind of take care of each other. They're kind of like this massive family of young people.
The FCA's street outreach program Finnell runs holds weekly meetings at the library where youth gather to eat, pick up used clothing, talk, and watch movies. Finnell also provides rides for medical care and job interviews on Wednesdays. She says her program offered a lot more until it lost federal grant funding last winter. Chad, a 21-year-old homeless man who's participated in the program since it started, says it makes a big difference for teens trying to survive on the street.
Back when I was really young, you know, we had to, like, steal to eat and live because we didn't have FCA and stuff. We had nothing. FCA didn't really start having a street outreach program till I was, like, 18, so I've noticed since FCA's been around, the younger generations haven't been happening to go to the extremes we went to get money to survive.
Chad is part of a group of homeless young people who rely on each other to carve out a life in Fairbanks. That typically means couch surfing, often landing at apartments where as many as 10 people crash in a one-bedroom unit. The life enables homeless young people to survive. But Stevie, another 21-year-old, says they know what they need to do to move on.
Making sure you have a job and you have a way to get money so you can actually get a place to stay. You can be able to get your own food. You can be able to survive for yourself and not have to look for other people for everything.
Stevie will speak at Thursday's vigil about the challenges homeless young people face in Fairbanks, particularly those under 18 and too young to stay at the rescue mission. Another longtime member of the FCA group, Alexi, a 19-year-old who recently got a good job in her own apartment, credits the FCA program and Finnell for helping her figure out her life.
Sarah really, really helped me with a lot of things. Like, she was there to talk to a lot, and that was pretty sweet.
Alexi says she regularly offers homeless friends a place to stay, but she and others say what Fairbanks needs is a homeless youth shelter. Let's hope the candlelight vigil raises awareness of that need and support for expansion of the Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption Street Outreach and other local homeless youth programs. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Gooseberry Peter is our audio engineer. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.